For our final speaker for before afternoon tea, I'd like to introduce Mike Thornton, who's going to be speaking on embedding risk appetite in a life insurer. Mike's the Chief Risk Officer at AMP Group and has over 20 years' experience in life insurance and wealth management. Mike held a number of senior finance roles in the UK before migrating to Australia in 2000 to join AXA Asia Pacific in Melbourne, where he was Group Chief Actuary and Group Chief Risk Officer, and successfully steered the AXA Asia Pacific Group through the global financial crisis. So please welcome Mike.
Thanks very much, everybody. I'm conscious that we're overrunning, so I hope I'm not going to eat too much into your afternoon tea. We'll see how you go. I'm going to be spending around 15 minutes just walking you through some of the challenges of embedding risk appetites into your business. By embedding, I mean, is risk appetite widely understood and embraced across your business? Is it actively used in a range of decision-making processes? And is there a culture where breaches of risk appetite are routinely reported to the board so that the board can validate management's understanding of appetite and the actions that the management team are proposing? Writing risk appetite statements is one thing. That's hard enough. But ensuring this really lives and breathes across your organisation and is embedded in your corporate DNA is quite another, and it's much tougher. For those of you in financial services, this is a journey that many of you will be on, and I'm sure that some of the themes I'll touch on in a moment will resonate with you. For those of you who are new to this subject, this is a journey that's well worth embarking on, and from a risk management perspective, it's a very powerful tool. Just to ensure that my messages are crystal clear, I thought I'd put these on the table from the get-go. I'll explain these in a little bit more detail in the slides that follow, and I'll loop back to these at the end. But to summarise, firstly, risk appetite is very important. It's not easy, and you need to stick with it. Secondly, be realistic about what you can achieve, and I'll touch on some of the challenges in a moment. And finally, anticipate those challenges and really plan from them from the beginning. It's worth reminding ourselves why risk appetite is important, why this is a priority for us, and why it's worth all the hard work. Well, during the financial crisis, you'll all be able to name companies who were surprised by some of the exposures they had. These were the companies who made the global headlines, and for all of these, there'll be countless others who got into difficulty but managed to stay out of the headlines. It's worth recalling some of these very big public losses and the commensurate reputational damage that occurred. AIG is perhaps the best example. They weren't alert to the exposures in the credit derivatives they were selling and wound up being bailed out by the US government to the tune of $180 billion. More recently, we've seen similar issues at JP Morgan with the so-called London Whale, leading to losses of $5.8 billion. And at HSBC, we saw a pretty significant disregard of AML regulations and a company who were dismissive of US regulators. That led to a $1.9 billion fine for HSBC and presumably them entering into a whole host of additional regulatory undertakings. The important thing about these examples is that in all cases, the reputational damage is significant. These issues led to huge management distractions, and the share price reactions are always much more significant than the losses themselves. And that's really the fear that the management team not having a good handle on its key risks, and the fear that poor corporate governance may have led to similar issues that are yet to be discovered. So as a result, risk appetite has certainly emerged as a key priority in financial services. And across the globe, we've seen a raising of standards. Most recently, the Financial Stability Board has issued a consultation document on risk appetite frameworks with a view to encouraging local regulators to raise standards in this important area. Of course, this is a journey that's been going on for some time, and locally, APRA have been very consistent in articulating what they expect from risk appetite statements. And we're now seeing that embraced, as Ian mentioned a moment ago, in prudential standards, which from 2015 are going to be applying to banks, life and general insurers. At a high level, what regulators are trying to do is to ensure that boards are able to clearly articulate their risk appetite and to demonstrate that they're operating within that. And unless you can do that, it's very hard to put hand and heart and really believe you've got a good handle on your risks. So that puts risk appetite at the very core of your risk management framework, but it's not easy to do and it does take some time. So why is this so hard? Well, how do you know your risk appetite is complete? Are all your risks captured? Can you measure all your risks and can you do that consistently across your business? How do you make risks easy to understand and communicate? Do you use a simple or a complex model of your risk exposures? How do you handle diversification and correlations? How do you ensure risk appetite is communicated across your business and does it need to be? How do you set your expectations of the behaviours you expect from your people? What about risks that are hard to measure? What do you do with them? What financial risks do you focus on? Do you focus on profit, capital, shareholder value, dividends, or all of the above? How do you make the exposures useful as a management tool? And finally, how do you make sure that they encourage the right decisions and the right behaviours across the team? Now, that's a very long list of challenges, none of which are easily addressed, and they all require a fair amount of thought and an approach which makes sense for your business and its culture. Importantly, what works for one business may not work for another. Key to really making this part of your corporate DNA is to make sure you've got strong buy-in and engagement from your board and from your management team. Unless you have that, it's going to be really hard to embed risk appetite into your decision-making processes. In particular, you need to understand how risk appetite is likely to impact those decisions, do the required benchmarking, and to ensure that it's having the desired impacts as you move forward. So almost as a prerequisite, you need to ensure that your management team and board understand the conceptual framework, understand what you're trying to achieve, and how you're addressing some of the key questions that are pictured on this slide. So you need to invest the time in getting these fundamentals right from the beginning. In terms of embedding, I'll step through a couple of examples that try to illustrate where this works well and where it's more challenging. So let's start with financial risk. This is perhaps the easiest to grapple with. You've got lots of past data and history to determine investment scenarios. You can determine your financial exposures, and even if you don't fully understand those, you can observe them as the markets move, so you can learn over a period of time. You can also do this at a number of levels. You can monitor your exposures at the product level, at a company level, or for the whole of your group. And you can also back test your results to ensure that your assessment of your exposures remains valid as the markets move. That done, you can start to think about establishing limits around these exposures and strategies to ensure that those exposures remain within limits. That might mean changing your investment strategies as you approach your risk limits, or perhaps establishing hedging strategies. Those of you from a banking environment will be very, very familiar with these tools which are embedded into your value at risk frameworks, but essentially the same kind of approaches can be readily applied to risk appetite. So in this way, you can allocate risks to different parts of your business at various levels and make conscious decisions around those risks you want to keep or increase and those limits you want to reduce or hedge. That requires some group-wide monitoring processes so you can measure your exposures consistently over time. But for something like financial risk, you'd expect those building blocks to be already in place. So you're really just leveraging those. So let's now contrast this with term insurance persistency, which, as we were just hearing, is topical in the industry right now. Whilst each company will have its own historical data, it's much harder to have confidence in what an adverse scenario really looks like. And it's much harder to have confidence in whether exposures are increasing or decreasing. And it's also, these are also exposures which are much harder to change over time. Sure, that can be achieved through reinsurance, but reinsurance isn't something that can be switched on or off quickly. So, to summarise these two examples, where you've got lots of data, have a good understanding of your exposures, can backtest your actual profits, and quickly reduce or hedge exposures, risk appetite is a very powerful tool and can operate at a number of levels across your business. With other exposures, it's a harder exercise. It's harder to measure your risks, harder to have confidence in the exposure, harder to have confidence to establish the limits, and that leaves you with more uncertainty as to what you might do and the actions you might take as you approach those limits. However, all is not lost. Fear not. There's still merit in establishing those exposures with a view to getting a holistic understanding of an enterprise-wide view of your risks. That allows you to get a sense of any additional capacity you might have for your business, so you can make informed decisions as to how you want to utilise that capacity. So coming back to lapses, you might say, I want to be cautious here. I've got enough of that risk, and I'd rather utilise my remaining capacity somewhere else by increasing another line of business. Similarly, you might establish qualitative statements for risks that can't be measured, and the Financial Stability Board explicitly call this out as something that they would expect. So, for example, in product pricing, you might establish a principle where you say that any new risks that are being introduced into your business need to be transparent, they need to be monitored, and mitigation processes need to be established once they reach a certain scale. That done, those key risk appetite principles can then be hardwired into your product development and approval processes. Let's think through another example. A qualitative statement may say something like, we have very little appetite for fraud. But figuring out exactly what that means isn't easy. How many is very little? Is the board comfortable with your current exposure or not? And if not, how much are we prepared to invest to strengthen our risk management tools? These discussions need to come to the fore, leading to transparent discussions and conscious business decisions as to whether further management action is required or not. And this is really the real benefit of a risk appetite framework, having those robust discussions with boards around whether we're comfortable with those exposures or not. For qualitative statements like this, the identification of key risk indicators is important. If a risk is important for the board and important for the management tool, these indicators should already exist, should already be monitored, perhaps using a traffic light system. So making these transparent, sharing these with the board and aligning them to your risk appetite statement helps to bring these qualitative statements to life. It also helps to ensure that there's a consistent understanding of these statements, and more importantly, if actual outcomes exceed these tolerances, the response of the management team can be validated by the board. Conversely, if key risk indicators don't currently exist, then maybe they need to be developed, or perhaps the risk isn't really important enough to justify being in the risk appetite statement. Finally, looking at this from another perspective, what does your organisational risk profile look like? Are there high residual risks? And are the management actions timely and well targeted? Perhaps you're operating outside risk appetite for a period of time. And if so, perhaps the board should be contemplating additional actions to manage those risks. So as you can see, there's a wide range of ways of embedding risk appetite statements. And so you'll need to consider how you do this and expect that some of these will take time. Be realistic about what you can achieve and make sure you manage expectations as you progress. These are not tools that are going to be perfect first time. They're living, breathing documents that need to be refined and regularly realigned to your operating environment. Moving on to some pitfalls, anticipate these and plan for them. Firstly, it's easy to think of risk appetite as something that seeks to limit risks, but it shouldn't be that way. It should encourage informed risk-taking and should be used to ensure that the business has a measured response when issues are thrown up. So, for example, if we do have very little appetite for fraud, we should expect that from time to time frauds will crop up, and we shouldn't overreact when that does happen. Secondly, watch out for misunderstandings. This will be obvious for actuaries, but people tend to confuse actual outcomes with exposures all of the time. If you limit your exposure to a loss of 100 one in 10 years, staff often infer that a loss of 50 million is okay. It's important to remember that a loss of 50 is just one potential outcome and tells you very little about your underlying exposures, which could be well in excess of 100. This type of misunderstanding can create a real false sense of security that you're operating well within your risk appetite when that might not be the case. Finally, watch out for the selective use of risk appetite statements. These need to be read in their entirety, as a number of parts of a statement might be relevant for a particular business decision. That's why hardwiring the relevant elements into the decision-making processes is so important. All of these pitfalls need to be explicitly addressed, as any one of these issues can undermine confidence in the entire framework, and that's going to make your job much harder in embedding risk appetite processes and really making sure that they have an impact on the decision-making process. So, to wrap up, risk appetite is important. Use a number of approaches to embed risk appetite and be realistic about what you can achieve. Anticipate the challenges and plan for them. And finally, I'll just remind you why this is important. Unless you can articulate your risk appetite and demonstrate you're operating within it, it's really hard to put a hand on heart and say you have a good handle on your risks. Thanks for your time.